Hello!
Hey guys, it's Arden Cho.
This is Seth Gilliam.
My name is Kiahu Kuhuanui.
Hey you guys, this is Melissa Ponzio.
I'm Lyndon Ashby.
Hey, it's Ronnie Adams.
This is Tyler Posey, and you are listening to Not Another.
Not Another.
Not Another.
This is Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast.
Yes, it is!
Oh!
Ha-ha!
This is Jeff Davis, and you're listening to Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast.
I'm friends with the monster, the son of my bed. Get along with the voices inside of my head. You're trying to save me, stop holding your breath. And you think I'm crazy, yeah, you think I'm crazy, crazy.
Hello everyone, welcome to Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast, episode number 78. Today we're talking about Teen Wolf Season 4, Episode 10, Monstrous. And it's me and Courtney today. Hey, Courtney.
Hi. It's Courtney.
I feel like you need like a little theme song and like a logo or something. Like, oh. You know what? Like, New Girl, she's like, it's Jess. And like, you know, she has the stuff around her.
I really need some intro music.
Yeah, that would be cool. I want intro music.
Well, nope, I asked for it first.
Natalie couldn't be with us today because she's in Melbourne, like, watching Les Mis for the 806th time. So her Wi-Fi was really bad. I don't even think she's seen the episode yet. So unfortunately, she couldn't be here. But it's me and Courtney, which...
Unfortunately, you get me.
No, I'm happy. I don't think we've ever had... Have we had an episode where it was just you and me before?
I don't think so, no.
Okay. This is exciting.
I'm excited. If you guys hate it, we'll blame it on Karen's back.
On my what?
On your half of the podcast.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
As usual, you guys can get in contact with us on Twitter, which is NATW Podcast, through email, which is natwpodcast@gmail.com, and on Tumblr, which is noneanotherteenwolfpodcast.tumblr.com. Let's jump right into this episode because there was a lot going on and I'm a little confused to some parts, so hopefully we can hash it out as we go along. But first, what was your favorite quote?
Mine was Satomi saying, "I know who Scott McCall is." It's pretty simple, but I think given the context, I'll explain later, but that's my favorite quote of the episode. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Satomi doesn't even have to do much, and I just love her. Like, she just has to stand there and look at them significantly, and I'm just like, you're the best character on the entire TV show. I don't know what it is. All of a sudden, I just love her so much.
Maybe we can get a spinoff.
That would be cool. She could be in Kira's spinoff.
Yeah. I agree.
Just because.
This will work. Yeah, sure.
My favorite quote was from Peter, and it was when he said, "I'm much healthier now," and it was just the way he said it, like
he was trying to convince himself as well,
kind of, but he was just like, yeah, I was crazy, but not anymore, and I don't know, it was just very typical Peter, like, deflecting and being dramatic, and
that actually reminds me a lot of Styles at the beginning of the season, where he's like, where Liam was like, well, what are you now, and he's like, better.
My god, that is so true. Oh, I never want to draw parallels between Peter and Styles ever again.
Womp womp. Okay.
So getting right into the discussion, the beginning was, I think, you know, it was just kind of a setup for the episode where we see Brett and the other girl and, you know, all that sort of stuff happens, but what I want to talk about is Kira, because I just love her so much. She's so badass, and I just love how she uses her sword all the time, and there's really nothing significant there. I just really like her.
And it seems like she left her mother's bedside after she got injured and immediately just went on a warpath, which, yay.
I'm not complaining.
No complaints. And why does everything always happen on the lacrosse field?
That is the unluckiest lacrosse field.
The high school and the lacrosse field. How are they both still open?
I don't know. And the hospital.
And the hospital. And there's so many other places, I'm sure.
Do they actually save lives in the hospital? We've seen this happen.
I don't. I'm sure that they don't have one of those counting clocks that says, hey, it's been 3 days and no deaths. They probably never put a one up there.
Or, you know, in the movie Hercules, when they're in the underworld and they have that big counter down at the bottom and it dings and it's like 1 trillion souls served or something like that. I just want to see something like that in Beacon Hills Memorial.
I think, yeah, we should suggest that and then submit it in writing.
Yeah, it would totally make it into the show.
I agree.
Liam was not a huge part of this episode this week, but I feel like what little bit he was in there was really, I don't know, important for his character, because he basically said that Liam can't be a hero like Scott is. He, you know, Scott is rushing off to go get Kira, and he kind of assumes that Liam's going to follow behind, and Liam sort of stops and looks down, and he's like, I can't do this. And to me, I really liked that, because for Scott, it's always easy to decide to do the right thing. And, you know, he's very brave and courageous. And I'm not saying that Liam isn't, because he is going through a lot right now. But I think it's interesting to see the flip side of it, where he's like, wait a second, you want to go after these assassins again? Like, we could die. Why are we doing this? And it's a much more realistic and human approach, I think.
Yeah, and I don't think Scott ever really looked at himself as being a hero. He just kind of does what he thinks is best. And I don't necessarily think he looks at Liam and thinks, oh, this guy's backing off. You know, he's not a hero. I don't think that's ever anything that's crossed Scott's mind. It's just a different approach. And but I think we're going to see more out of Liam in that respect.
Yeah, I feel like that was a setup. Like, by the end of the season, he's going to become the hero. He's going to do something, maybe against his better judgment, and really come out on top. What I like, too, is that Scott didn't judge him for it. He was just like, okay, I'll take you home. Like, he completely understands.
Yeah, he respected that, which is great.
Scott McCall for president.
Oh, 2000. Oh, wait, crap. 14? 2004? No. Never mind.
16.
Jeez. I'm a bad American.
I don't think that makes you a bad American.
Okay, good.
Another part of this scene was when Liam was like, how are you all still alive? And Scott was like, not all of us are.
No.
That just really hurt.
God, the pain.
Yeah, it's like Allison has not been at the forefront of this season, but the way that she's been mentioned sort of subtly, like not even always by name like this, has really made it like nobody's forgotten about her. We haven't forgotten about her, and the characters haven't forgotten about her, and yet they are trying to move on. But she never, like, her memory isn't going to go away that easily. And I like that, you know, it's not like she got killed off and, okay, we're moving on now. Like, she was Scott's first love. She was Lydia's best friend. She was friends with a lot of people, and a lot of people really miss her. And I like that they just haven't, you know, shoved that under the rug.
Yeah, I agree. And I think they're honoring her memory in ways that their actions show, like well, Chris, you know, following her code as far as we know, and just things like that. I think they're doing a good job. I know a lot of people would have liked to seen a funeral, and I would have liked that too, but yeah, I'm pleased with how they mention her and reference her.
Yeah, definitely. I have some questions about Chris and honoring her memory, but we'll get to that in a little
bit. Yeah, that's why I kind of hesitated. So we'll get back to that. We'll get back to that.
I have a feeling we're on the same wavelength there. but Satomi, let's talk about Satomi, the best character on this entire show. No, I don't actually think that, but I do really like her. I think she has a lot of potential. But were you expecting there to be so many members left of Satomi's pack?
Well, considering how many people we saw dead in the woods, you know, that was a large amount of people, you know, part of her pack that had died and were poisoned. So, yeah, I think I was surprised to see as many as there were left. But I think the only pack that we've really seen on the show is Scott's pack. And, you know, the numbers in his pack are you know, that's all we have to base on. We never really physically saw how many people were in Derek's, you know, family or his pack before the fire. So I think it's interesting to compare how big her pack is or was in, you know, in regards to Scott's.
Yeah, that's true, because Scott sort of like randomly found his pack members. I mean, they're not all werewolves. Some of them are humans. Some of them, you know, like Allison was a hunter and Lydia's a banshee. And there's all this kind of, you know, random conglomerate of these supernatural and non-supernatural creatures. And so I feel like, yeah, his pack isn't exactly the standard. So I don't know why I was surprised to see that Tsutomi's was so large. But it makes me wonder how it got so big, because we know that she sort of seemed to take in these, not runaways, because we don't know all of their stories, but people who didn't seem to go together. I mean, they weren't a family like Derek's pack was. Mm-hmm. That was the Hale family that was the pack. And for Tsutomi, like, she has older people, she has younger people, even younger than Brett. I was surprised by that young blonde girl that was there. And it's just interesting to think that over the years, because we know that she's a lot older, she's just sort of kept bringing all these people in, and who knows how large it ended up getting.
I think I could easily see Scott filling that role as well, just kind of taking in those who needed to be taken in and being a home for those, you know, like Satomi's doing. I really think that there could be a parallel between the two of them, and her talking about, you know, her fear that they won't always be able to resist their true nature. And I think Scott's going through the same thing with himself right now.
Oh, yeah. Did you get this weird sense that maybe Satomi's pack and Scott's pack could merge at some point?
That would be interesting. And maybe. Would they be co-alphas?
I don't know. I think that would be really interesting. I mean, Satomi is older and wiser, but
maybe she's ready to retire.
Maybe. Maybe she would be willing to sort of like, yeah, pass it along. But, you know, Scott's the true alpha, and I think that holds its own sort of power. You know, I almost see him as not like royalty, but somebody that, I mean, being a true alpha is really rare. So people are definitely going to look up to him. And the way that, like, he told Brett to back down and Brett listened, mm-hmm. I thought was significant. And I think Satomi sort of reveres him in a way, and I don't know if their packs would ever merge, but I was thinking about it, like, what if that did happen? All of a sudden, he's got all these other pack members. I mean, that'd be a lot of new characters to the show.
Yeah. Also, this is going back to, you know, my quote that I picked for the episode when Satomi was like, I know who Scott McCall is. There's been so many times we've seen how many people that just know who Scott is, Deucalion, the Calaveras, Satomi, etc. And it's taken me a while, but I finally realized what it is that it reminds me of. Basically, Scott McCall is the Harry Potter of the werewolves. And becoming a true alpha is the equivalent of defeating Voldemort. And now everyone knows his name.
How appropriate is that, though? I just keep thinking, like, Harry werewolf. Like,
oh, God.
It just makes so much sense. No, that is actually really interesting. And I wonder, it does make me wonder how news like that has traveled. I mean, we know that the Alpha Pack had heard about what was going on in terms of Derek becoming Alpha. And just, it's weird how that news travels. You know what I mean? Because we don't see a lot of the werewolves around, but obviously they have been in Beacon Hills for a while. So I would like to see some of that background stuff sometime.
I wouldn't say no to it either.
So what was this yellow plant that Chris found? Was that the really deadly wolf's bane that those two kids were using?
Oh gosh. Garrett?
Yeah. Were they called as a pair?
The orphans.
I kept thinking, like, the siblings, and I was like, no, they weren't siblings.
That's
like
the Harry Potter references. They're orphans.
Orphans, yes. Okay. Yeah, that was interesting. I was a little confused by that scene. That was his warehouse, right?
Yes.
Okay, so then somebody had set up shop in there and seemed to be growing all sorts of plants.
Oh, wait, I'm thinking of where he hid it afterwards.
Where did he find it?
No, I think, maybe it wasn't his, maybe he had it locked up and he moved it into a safer location.
There are too many abandoned warehouses in Beacon Hills.
Yes, I need clarification on this one. Because, yeah, that's a good point. Where he was walking into at the beginning versus where he stored the flower. Was that two separate places?
I assumed that it wasn't, but I could definitely see now. I mean, it would make sense if it was, because mm-hmm. you don't exactly just waltz into Chris Argent's warehouse and start doing, you know, illegal activities, especially if that's targeted toward the werewolves that he's obviously protecting. Just, it's not very smart.
Well, my question is, why is he hiding it? Why is he moving it? Like, what use does that, if it's, you know, a deadlier type of wolfsbane, what use is it to Chris? Why does he have it? Is he hiding it from other hunters, or is he hiding it from the werewolves?
I mean, if you were to hide it from other hunters, like, just destroy it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that would be
yeah.
a lot smarter. And he was sort of, like, cradling it in his hands, and he locked it up in that safe. It feels really significant, and I don't know, like, is he planning on using it on Peter? That,
yeah.
you know, that makes sense, because Peter's not a good guy, but...
Or even Kate?
Oh, that's true. Oh, that's really sad.
Oh, man.
Wow. But this is what I mean. This is kind of what we were talking about before. Like, I trust Chris. I really do. I still think that he's a good guy, but he's been a little shady the last couple of episodes, and I don't really know where this is going.
Yeah, because we've seen how he was with the Calaveras when they showed up, and he seemed kind of like there was a snap moment where a lot of people were like, what's going on? And he's been very lenient whenever he's seen Kate, which... To me, I don't know. Yeah, there's something not quite right.
And he's been disappearing a lot. I mean, Scott keeps saying, oh, I don't know where Arjun is.
He's on Deaton levels.
Oh, God. Speaking of Deaton.
Having drinks.
Yeah, maybe. That's no excuse.
No excuse. None.
So, switching gears... We've got our Stiles and Malia reunion, and I don't know about you, but I was really, really happy that they finally made up. I think it was fair on both their parts that Stiles didn't want to tell Malia, and I think it's fair that Malia was mad, and I think that, you know, them arguing and staying apart from each other for a little bit, totally logical, but at the same time, I was really glad that they were just kind of like, I'm really sorry. And Malia was like, still really like you. She sounded angry when she said that.
I think she growled a little bit. She's frustrated with herself that she likes him so much, which I think is really cute because I'm sure she hasn't experienced those emotions before. And just seeing how she's approaching things is always fun.
Yeah. And we had the mysterious door in this episode. And what... was going on, and Brooke actually wondered, was it really Melissa that locked them in?
That's what I'm curious about as well.
I think it is, because on Wolf Watch, they mentioned that as well, that she was sort of playing matchmaker to those
okay.
two.
Okay.
But it was a little weird that, like, I get the whole locked door thing, like, I mean, because she had just left, it makes sense, but, like, when the door opened again, she wasn't there. Like, no one was there. And I was like, is this a matchmaking ghost or what's going on?
Like, how involved is Melissa? Because now I'm just picturing Scott at the end of the day going home, and, you know, with some milk and cookies and just talking to his mom about everything that's going on. Like, Malia and Stiles are fighting again. And she's just sitting there listening and just, you know, patting his head, giving him more milk. Like, if it really was Melissa, I can't help but wonder how much she knows and how involved she is, not just with Scott, but with Stiles, which, oh, that makes me really kind of happy, sad, you know, that she maybe has taken on the mom role.
Yeah. Oh, that is really cute. A lot of people didn't like how Malia called Melissa stupid, And I think, like, I could see where people would get kind of mad about that just because everybody loves Melissa. I mean, like, seriously, who does not love Melissa? And for Malia to just, you know, drop that, it's kind of like, whoa, calm down. But I think you also have to remember that Malia, she doesn't know social conventions, and she was upset, and she was like, why would she do that? That's really dumb. And I don't think she actually meant it in the way that she really believes that Melissa is stupid.
Yeah, no, I agree. And the action was stupid, not necessarily Melissa, I think, is what she was trying to say. But I guess that's one area that she could still use a little bit more progress in.
Yeah, progress.
Filtering herself when angry.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Jumping back to Chris and all of them, you know, Scott and Tim come face to face with the other pack, and they sort of realize that some of the assassins are actually hunters because they're using crossbows, and it's just sort of like the same MO. And I find this really interesting because, as far as I can tell, it's a separate group from the Argents. And as I was writing this in our doc, I was like, wait, I think Chris is the only one that's really left. Oh, I mean, I guess you have Kate, but she kind of doesn't count anymore. Yeah, Gerard's like, whatever, I don't know. But I wrote the Argents, and I was like, there's only like one of them left.
The sole Argent.
Yeah, it's really sad. Anyway, it seems to be a separate group from the Argents and the Calaveras. I think if it was the Calaveras, we probably would have seen, you know, some of their faces and to be able to recognize them. But yeah, what do you think about like another group of hunters being out there, and do you think that maybe we'll be meeting some more in the future?
I mean, I think it's definitely plausible because, I mean, you have, I'd imagine that the Argents and the Calaveras aren't the two sole groups of hunters in the, you know, in the world, just like, you know, Scott's pack isn't the only one. Yeah, I think it's very likely that we could see another group of hunters. Even if their role is just this, it would make sense to me that others would get involved for the money. But yeah, I mean, why not?
Yeah, I would love to see more hunters, just because I know after Allison decided that they were going to sort of change their code, Jeff had said that hunters were going to have problems with that. I mean, you can't just change the code that they had been all living by for so long. And I think the Calaveras kind of fill that role in terms of questioning Chris and what he's doing. But I would like to see other hunters come in, maybe on the opposite side, maybe being like, oh, hey, we kind of like what this Argent guy is doing. Maybe we should try this too. I think that would be cool.
Yeah, no, I agreed. Following by their example, I think, would be nice. But I'm sure you're going to have ones that are, like, very adamantly no and are going to put up a fight.
Yeah, definitely. So speaking of the assassins, we find out that the Deadpool wasn't originally meant to be a hit list. This was kind of surprising for me, and I really like this twist on it, because we found out that these are just all of the deaths that Lorraine Martin had ended up predicting. And it wasn't necessarily like she didn't mean it as a hit list. She just sort of wrote it down as her predictions. And it was Meredith and that whole thing that we find out about later turning it into this hit list.
Mm-hmm. I'd really like to know more about these predictions, because right now we just have names, right? Like just names of people whose deaths she predicted. But how? When? I could write 20 names down on a piece of paper and be like, you're all going to die. Well, yeah.
You're not a banshee.
I just want to know, like, what the context of these predictions were.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, to me, when, I don't remember which episode it was in, maybe the last one, maybe the one before, but it sounded like she had been working toward finding out more information about her own powers, and that's when she brought Meredith in. And I don't know if Meredith did it by herself or if they worked on it together, but I kind of thought that perhaps this list sort of came all at once. But other than that, like that context, I really don't know what could have been going on with it. What I'm really curious about is she predicted the deaths of everyone, of like all of the main characters pretty much, but they all also happen to be supernatural creatures. So that's kind of interesting. I don't know what sort of significance that has, but you know, Scott was on there and Kira's on there, and there's, you know, are they all going to die at the same time? Is there going to be like some big supernatural war and they're just all going to kill each other? Or is this like you were saying, I want some context and I want to know how Scott is supposed to die and when and how, I don't know. It's just kind of,
or maybe even she had a different type of banshee ability than Lydia, for example. What if she could not, you know, not just death, but like near death. Okay, this one's going to have a near-death experience but not die. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Like, cause it's, yeah, it's just so many, and I just really need to know, like, where this came from, because it's going to drive me nuts. Okay.
Yeah, pretty much. Speaking of Deadpools, these are very good transitions that I'm doing. I hope you're taking note. I'm usually really bad at them. I'm just like, okay, next point.
Moving on.
Yeah. Yeah, that's my go-to phrase. But... talking about Deadpools, I really liked this scene. This was almost my favorite line, but it was more like a conversation, so I didn't want to pick that. I wanted like a one-liner, and it was when Scott was like, Derek said, you know, they might have claws and fangs, but they can't fight. And Scott was like, well, that's why I called you. And he's like, well, I don't have claws anymore either. And Brayden goes, that's why he called me. And it was just, I don't know, a really great moment. And I love the fact that Derek is owning his humanity, which he's been doing for the last few episodes, and that he was willing to ask Brayden for help. I mean, obviously, they're in some sort of relationship now, so I'd be surprised if he didn't call her. But, you know, Derek's never been one to ask for help all that easily. And, you know, him becoming human, man, it's my new favorite thing.
Yeah, it's working for him, I'd have to say. And then also, Brayden showing up. I do think that they're in, obviously, some sort of adult relationship. There's something going on there.
You think?
We'll leave it there. But, like, I can't imagine that when he called her for help or, like, was like, hey, come with me to do this, she was like, okay, well, write me a check first.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's a good point, because this is sort of what Megan Tandy was talking about in the beginning of the season when we interviewed her. She's like, well, you might see Brayden start to change and start to care about these people, and we were wondering how that would happen, and it's actually been kind of subtle. I mean, I knew that she obviously had some feelings for Derek. I mean, we don't know if they're, like, super official feelings, or if they
have feelings in my pants.
I mean, they definitely have feelings in their pants, but you know, is there more to it than that? We don't really know the extent of their relationship. Do they have deep talks at night, long talks about life and death? And you know, I don't know.
Ice cream.
Yeah, aw, that's really cute.
But I'm sure he likes chocolate and mint, and she likes Cherry Garcia.
Oh, and they still work together. It's beautiful. This is, for you guys that don't know, this is a long, ongoing debate between me and Courtney. My favorite is Cherry Garcia. Courtney likes chocolate chip. What is it?
Mint chocolate chip.
Not just chocolate chip. And we just, it's hard to reconcile those two things sometimes.
Yeah,
because
I don't like fruit in my ice cream, and she doesn't like mint in her chocolate. Yeah. So. Anyway,
off topic.
Moving on.
Feelings in the pants. That's what we were talking about.
Okay.
Yeah. And there was an actual point here. Something about Derek.
About him going, him embracing his humanity and accepting help.
Yes, it's very nice. Was that really it?
Yes, we like it.
Okay, there we go. So Derek says he wants to make a Deadpool of his own and put the assassins on his Deadpool, and it was this great, like, awesome speech, and Brayden like cocked her shotgun and it was like perfect timing. And I don't know. I really liked it. It was kind of intense.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know. I loved how that timing, but there was a post on Tumblr going around that made me laugh, and I'd have to find the link, but they're like, can you imagine Brayden just following Derek around in like random intervals, like cocking her gun just to like, he's like sitting down in a restaurant, like I'll have the steak. And she's like, like it was beautiful. I'll have to find it.
Oh, please do, because that's just,
it's going to be her signature, move.
Yes, it is. I remember what we were saying. It wasn't about Derek. It was about Brayden. it was when we were interviewing Megan Tandy, she was like, yeah, you're going to start seeing her change. To me, it's been really subtle. But like you said, she isn't asking for a check. And it that didn't really sort of come to the forefront of my mind until you said that. But now I realize that, yeah, she's sort of just been helping them, not even to find Kate, to actually protect the werewolves and to protect them. She doesn't have to be there. She's risking her life. And I just love that, you know, it just sort of happened.
Yeah, she's kind of quietly picking a side without, well, maybe she means to. Maybe she's doing it on purpose. But yeah, she's definitely siding herself slowly with Derek.
Kylo Veras are going to be so pissed.
Oh, so pissed.
This is part of this scene coming up is one of the ones that really confused me. And there's more scenes that confused me because this was really like they packed a lot of information and action into this episode. And usually one or the other, like my brain can process it, but this one I was just all over the place. I don't know. And I watched it twice too, but I was still a little foggy. So maybe we can clear it up. But Lorraine sent Meredith to the hospital. Like she drove her crazy. Her ears were bleeding. Meredith had to go to the hospital because of Lorraine. She ended up going into the same room as Peter. They're both sort of like medical mysteries. The doctors didn't really know what was going on with all of them. Mm-hmm. And this is where Meredith heard all of Peter's thoughts about wanting to get rid of the weak and blaming Talia for what happened and all this other nonsense. I mean, he was clearly crazy. So Meredith was the one that turned Lorraine's list into a hit list. Did I get all of that right?
Sure.
Like I said, there was Lydia's been giving a lot of exposition in the last few episodes, which Holland is really good at delivering and making it interesting, but it's been like info dump, and I understand why they have to do it, but it is a lot to process.
Yeah, I have a feeling once the season's over and I can sit down and watch from episode one through without a week in between, more will make sense. Because right now, yeah, I am a little fuzzy like you are, and I'm just going to smile and nod. Like, yeah, no, that's totally what's going on.
Yeah, and I really like some sort of loose timeline because the chart that they were looking at when Meredith first went into the hospital, she was 16 years old. Mm-hmm. And now, I mean, if she was in the hospital when Peter was in there for his burns, that means now, currently on Teen Wolf, it's been 6 to 7 years. So she's about 22 to 23. So then that means that Lorraine must have died just a few years ago, which I hadn't realized. For some reason, I thought Lorraine died when, like, Lydia was little.
Yeah, I'm a little unsure about that as well. I mean, yeah, I mean, if that's what we're going on, she has died within the last 6 to 7 years. That's what you're saying, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, she wanted Lydia to wait until she was 18 to, spread her ashes?
Yeah, which would have meant she would discover the mountain ash and, you know, everything would kind of come up. But I just, you know, why didn't she ever tell Lydia anything? Was she trying to protect her?
I guess she could have been between the ages of 10 and 13 at that point. Maybe she just didn't think she was old enough. Like, didn't want to. Because, I mean, I'm sure, you know, Lorraine had went through so much and saw a lot and was just, I'm sure she didn't want to put Lydia through that at a young age until she absolutely had to know.
Yeah, that's true. That makes a lot of sense, and that probably is the reason. I was like, look, it would have made things so much easier on Lydia if you had just told her from the beginning, but I mean...
She wanted her to enjoy her childhood.
Yeah, whatever. It would have been much better if she had framed her as a banshee.
Just ruined her.
Like, all of this stuff wouldn't have happened, and then there'd just be no Teen Wolf, and that would be sad. So never mind. This does make sense.
Moving on.
Moving on.
I retract my original statement. Let's continue.
So Styles and Malia tear down a wall at the lake house.
Oh,
and
man.
They're going to be so mad.
So mad.
That was like, really? Really, you're doing this? They need to sell this?
And I was like, that is really going to kick, you know, some of the value. It's going to knock it down so much.
And in this room, here's the secret compartment with, you know, these machines from the 1970s, which were really interesting, actually. I like the fact that those didn't go away, that Lorraine had sort of, like, kept them on for all of these years and had somehow connected them to the record player, which I guess allowed them to hear things better. Yeah, it was just, you know, the machines were still on after all that time.
I have two questions. Why couldn't they have put it behind, like, a door, like a hidden bookcase? And two, I'm wondering if there is a market on eBay for antique recording equipment that they could sell and make back the money.
Perhaps, although that seems dangerous, because if that was what was chugging out the Deadpool... Putting that on eBay and spreading that around, not too smart.
Well, the next logical step would to be make it official Beacon Hills High School equipment.
Oh my god, that is so true.
It would fit right in.
Or just like stick it out on the lacrosse field.
Oh my god.
It can't get much worse out there, why not?
Oh. God. Anyway.
Anyway, back at the station, Sheriff Stalinsky is really, really, really close to killing Peter. I mean, I knew Peter wasn't going to die because I felt like there was a lot more that needed to happen with him so far in the season, but, I mean, Sheriff Stalinsky was very close to pulling the trigger, and he told him there won't be a third time. He gives him a sort of final warning, and Peter just walks away, but... Wow, that was really intense for the sheriff.
The second time was him attacking Meredith, correct? What is the first time? You're saying, like, this was his third warning, correct?
Yeah.
Or there wouldn't be a third warning. So we know the second one was him acting out with Meredith. Are we assuming that Styles told his dad about Peter attacking Lydia?
The sheriff was there when Peter killed the mute.
Got it. Okay.
But was the second one really with Meredith?
I don't know. That's what I was thinking because, I mean, they
No, duh. Okay, I was thinking there had to be three, but he said there won't be a thing. Yeah, never mind.
That makes me curious if Styles did ever tell his dad about the fact that it was Peter that attacked Lydia on the lacrosse field because... You know, we saw back in season one how upset Sheriff was when he thought it was Styles, and, like, I'm just, you know, and now he's standing right in front of the person who actually did do it. Does he know that?
I want to say yes. I want to say that Styles has filled him in on pretty much everything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he clearly knows how dangerous Peter is, and I don't know about you, but I got this really awesome sense of almost like a father-daughter bonding moment between Sheriff Stalinsky and Lydia when they were sitting outside the room that Meredith was in, and Lydia was like, I'm not going home, and Sheriff is like, you really should, and they were kind of like bickering a little bit, and neither one of them would really give, but you could tell that they both like cared about each other.
Yeah.
Sheriff, like, I think he really does feel protective of Lydia, and I don't think it's just because she's some girl that happens to be mixed up in all of this. It really kind of feels like they've gotten close, that he's gotten to know her, and I love that. It was such a cool thing, especially given that Sheriff is Styles' father and Styles' relationship with Lydia and how he's felt about her for so long.
Yeah, we have so much, like, co-parenting on the show that it's pretty subtle, like, with Melissa and with Styles, and now we have, and we don't see Lydia's dad, is he even, you know, present? So now we have, you know, Sheriff acting like that with Lydia, and it's just,
I love
how the parents are kind of taking in the whole pack.
Okay, so the parents should all just get married to each other, and then they cannot wait. But then if they're all, like, siblings, that would be kind of awkward.
Mm. Yeah, and how many people are involved here? There's just...
Well, Peter's a parent, technically, too, and I don't want any of those people getting married to him, so let's scratch that idea. That's off the table.
So we have Melissa, Agent McCall, and Sheriff?
And the Yukimuras, kind of.
Hmm. Yes, we can make this work. We'll get a community in Utah.
We ostracize Peter, though. He's not allowed.
Yeah, no. There's going to be an electric fence that he can't get past.
So, one of the biggest parts of this episode that was actually a really quick moment, I didn't even catch it the first time that it happened. I thought it was really bad CGI, and I was wondering what was going on. I was so confused, you guys. Was Scott started turning into this, like, the Uber Alpha or whatever. What do we call Peter when he's in his crazy state? I don't know. But he's, you know, that sort of big beast of a werewolf. Scott started turning into him a little bit.
Yeah, I think we've only seen it with Deucalion and Peter, so I would imagine it's just whatever their full alpha form is. Like,
See, and I always thought with Deucalion, that had to do with the fact that he had killed so many of his betas, because he kept saying, like, he was the demon wolf, and I kind of thought maybe that was something different.
Yeah, no, and it's supposed to represent, like, you know how Jackson turned into Kanema. You know, you transform into something that represents who you are, correct?
Right. Yeah.
Well, we've got, you know, the demon wolf and Peter's wolf, and, you know, we've got two twisted individuals. That's the only word I could think of. That's what they look like, fully transformed. And I think the hope would be for Scott to transform into an actual wolf, like we saw with Talia.
Right.
So in the scene, we saw this kind of distorted wolf, and I'm sure that's his fear.
Yeah, because he was attacking that guy, and he wasn't stopping. I mean, it was vindictive and vicious and scary, and I think that was him losing a little bit of control.
I agree, yeah.
Which is really interesting, because Scott is the hero. He's the one with the purest heart. He's the bravest, almost stupidly so. And the fact that he couldn't hold back that anger is, I think, a really interesting twist on the character, because he can't be perfect all the time. That gets boring. And I like seeing him as somebody who is very much black and white. Like, he himself is, you know, white. He's the knight in shining armor, and he kind of enters into this world of gray, and he has to figure out what to do. Like Captain America, which
I have not seen.
You don't get that reference. But, you know, Captain America is just a good person, and he has to battle, like, all these spies and stuff who don't follow the same rules that he does, and the choices that he makes makes him more compelling, because you want to see how far he's going to go. You know, is he going to cross that line? And Scott's always been exactly like that, and the fact that maybe he is towing that line now, that he has the potential of becoming something monstrous, is really interesting. I mean, I don't think I want to see him cross that line, but I think I want to see him struggle with it a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. And I think ignoring the fact that the potential is there in every person is unrealistic. And so the fact that they're addressing, like, hey, there's this aspect of Scott that is not so good, and just seeing how he's dealing with it is very interesting to me.
Yeah, definitely. And, Malia, sort of, she's always been, I don't want want to say that she's the opposite of Scott because I think she is a good person, but she doesn't mind getting a little violent. And I really liked that scene where she was just going to punch through those machines and Styles had to hold her back.
Which was very interesting. How much strength was she not using if he could easily reach out and grab her arm? Or maybe Styles is stronger than we think.
Oh, maybe. I would like to think that she just, you know, held back for him. Like, she saw that he was reaching and she was like, okay, well, I can't, like, you know, smash through his hand or anything. But, they end up finding a key in the wine bottle.
Which wasn't wine at all.
No. We were having a conversation about this earlier. And we think it was just, like, juice or something. And then somebody said...
Brooke
was like, Lydia, where do you get your juice? And I just died. I was gone. I had to leave the group.
It's Acme Invisible Ink.
Pretty
like
much.
Like a Roger Rabbit where they squirt it and it just disappears. That's what it was. It totally was.
I love that you brought up Roger Rabbit, by the way. I really like that movie.
See, I have seen that one.
Very good. Captain America's next.
I know.
the wine, I think, also confused a lot of people. They were like, where did that come from? And, yeah, I don't know why she would have hidden the key in the wine other than that is actually an excellent hiding place. Like, who would think to look there for it? But
Garrett had his hands on the bottle, though, didn't he?
That's true.
He was pouring out of it, and she was like, no, that's a $300 bottle of wine, and took it from him.
Yeah.
But she took the glass and brought it upstairs.
Yeah, the thing is, did anyone drink that? Because she, like, there was those two cups that were just sitting in the room, and that's what she knocked over.
Okay.
If you had drank that, wouldn't you have known that it wasn't wine?
Well, the two cups in the room, if those were the... Wait. If the two cups that were spilt were already in the room?
Yeah.
Well, then they were poured from that bottle.
Right.
Okay. I'm just trying to get this all clear in my head.
I think we're thinking too much.
We're thinking way too much.
Look, the wine was not wine. It's very important. The key was inside the bottle. That's what matters.
Key was with the juice.
Yes.
That Lydia's mom or grandmother bought. Okay. Yes.
And so they end up turning off the machines and all of the assassins fall back, which was really lucky because that sort of is what brought Scott down from being really scary. And I think that was lucky timing. I don't think we're maybe going to be so lucky next time. I think this is something he really is going to struggle with. But, you know, aside from that, the Deadpool, as far as we know, is over with. It's done. I actually really liked the direction that they took this in because there were technically two benefactors and yet neither one of them was really the benefactor. It was kind of cool how they did it because Meredith revealed herself as the benefactor, but it turns out that Peter was the one that gave her the idea. She thought she is a little crazy, so you can't think of it logically. She was the one just sort of doing what she was told to do, whereas Peter didn't know that he had told her those things.
Yeah, it's definitely a very interesting combo to come up with to make one villain.
Yeah, I like how it wasn't so cut and dry and how it wasn't like, okay, here's the bad guy. We have to figure out how to defeat him. And we're done. You can't really defeat Peter because he's still sort of in hiding. He's still Derek's uncle. You know, they don't necessarily know what his grand schemes are right now. And you can't really defeat Meredith because she didn't necessarily know what she was doing. She's kind of crazy. She realizes...
Kind of like a pawn.
Yeah, and she realizes at the end what she did, and she's sort of like, oh my God, you know, she freaks out a little bit, and that's when Lydia says, not all monsters do monstrous things, which is one of my favorite lines, I think, in all of Teen Wolf. It was really good. I wanted a funny line for my line, or I would have quoted that one, but yeah.
Oh. I'm sorry.
getting emotional.
Yeah, it's what's new. Welcome to another podcast episode.
So very, very end of the episode, we find out that Peter wants Scott dead.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, like, that's not really a surprise because we know he's sort of been planning this since 3A. He was like, I've always been the alpha, and he gets all dramatic and stuff. But, you know, it is, am I weird to say, and the answer is yes, but am I weird to say that I really like the idea of Kate and Peter working together because they're just super shady and it just, I don't know, it just works.
Well, okay, first of all, I don't think you're weird at all, but I am curious about...
Thanks.
You're like, it's the nicest thing you've ever said to me, Courtney.
It actually is.
Shut up. I think it's ironic that Peter is so adamant and he wants Scott dead. Like, that's number one on the pool. You know, he's the most expensive. He's worth the most. But if it weren't for Peter, Scott wouldn't be an alpha. He wouldn't be a wolf. And it's just, he's created the one thing that he wants dead the most.
Whoa. That's deep. Like, not even being sarcastic. Like, yeah, mind blown. I feel like that really speaks to Peter's character on, like, a psychological level.
Yeah, and, like, another thing with Kate and Peter working together... I don't know. I'm a little confused. He was so angry after the fire, like so angry, talking about wanting to kill off the week. And why would he easily pair up with Kate, who was responsible for the fire?
I think it's convenience. And I think that she's sort of the one person that she needs him in order to help control what she's going through. And she's not exactly going to run off to her brother and be like, Peter's doing all of this and we need to save Scott McCall. I mean, she's not a good person. And so I think that, you know, she's just somebody that he can work with. So
yeah, it sounds like they're both using one another for personal gain.
Pretty much. And I think it's interesting that in the next episode, we saw promos for it, that he's asking Malia to kill her. So that seems...
Which is interesting considering there's... There's been talk, like, what if Kate was actually Malia's mom? It's a far-fetched theory, but there, you know, a lot of people thought that Peter and Kate worked together before the fire.
Like, yeah, I know before we learned about the desert, what is it?
Desert wolf.
The desert wolf, yeah, that her mother was a coyote. Mm-hmm. I thought maybe it could be Kate too,
yeah.
But now that we've learned that, I really think that's just not even plausible anymore.
Yeah, it would be interesting, you know, hey, meet your mother, now kill her.
Wow, because Malia needs to be messed up even more.
Oh, gosh. Okay, no. Yeah, we're going to take that one off the table.
I'm just curious why all of a sudden he wants Kate gone if she's going to help him get everything that he wants.
Well, once he's got everything once he's got what he needs from her and he has no more use for her, then why not?
Well, true, but Scott's not dead yet, so he doesn't have what he wants. So that's why I'm like, okay, does he not need her anymore? Unless the whole thing is like a ploy and he's trying to set up something, because we know that he can pull some strings, that he's been able to control and manipulate people. And this could just be part of that process, that he doesn't really want her dead. He's just saying that to, you know, I don't know, make people look the other way or something.
Like, oh, it's not me. I'm not the bad guy. Kill her. She's bad.
Yeah, exactly.
So many questions.
So many questions.
So many.
I don't know, but that was basically it for Monstrous. It was a very, like I said, confusing episode for me, but I liked it. I thought there was a lot of action and a lot of explanation, and episodes 9 and 10 usually tend to be fairly significant in Teen Wolf, and I felt like these definitely lived up to that, because in 9 we found out about Meredith, and in 10 we found out about Peter, and more of like what happened with the Deadpool. So, I don't know, going into, we only have 2 more episodes left. We have 11 and 12. And
then do you think they're going to answer all of our questions?
No, they never do. They always leave us hanging. And I read somewhere, I don't know if this is just hearsay or whatever, but I read that season 4 is going to leave us off on a fairly big cliffhanger. I don't know if that's legit or not, but I keep thinking about it, and I'm like, of course they would do that.
Maybe it's a literal cliff in Mexico.
Oh, maybe. I mean, that would be kind of okay with me.
Like, okay, Courtney, you're being a bit dramatic. Move on, Peter Hale, okay?
Okay, since you put together this couple pieces of feedback, why don't you take those?
Okay, yeah, we had two submissions on the Tumblr. The first one was from username You Can Call Me Captain Galley. I'm assuming I'm pronouncing that right. I don't understand the reference, but okay. I have a slight feeling that Scott may end up putting Liam in Satomi's care after this week's episode. Scott's pack are fighters. There's death and conflict around every corner. In the meantime, Liam has been in the time that Liam has been a member, he's been kidnapped, thrown down a well, almost killed in a fight with berserkers, hurt, and now he's kind of suffering from, you know, he's conflicted. Satomi's pack aren't fighters. They're peaceful, and Satomi learns how to keep them calm for now. Liam said he's not like Scott, and Satomi offers everything Liam needs. So what do we think on that being a possibility? Do you think Scott would just give Liam the option to swap packs?
No, because I don't think that Scott would give up on Liam like that. But at the same time, I don't think that Scott would force Liam to do anything he didn't want to do. Like I said, I think Liam is going to have his heroic moment by the end of the season. And I don't necessarily think that's going to be out of character or anything, because when he was fighting the Berserker, he was doing it in order to help Kira and to save her. I mean, he ran off after her. He wasn't necessarily like, you know, Kira didn't say, oh, Liam, come on, come help me. Like, he just went after her. So he can be heroic and he can be brave. I think he's just shaken right now. So I think maybe what might end up happening instead of switching packs is perhaps Satomi will stick around and help guide all of them, Scott included, in trying to be, you know, more zen and more peaceful. And maybe instead of actually switching packs, Satomi will kind of become like a mentor to Liam, because I think he could use something like that. He needs confidence, not the kind of confidence that will lead him to, you know, start getting in fights in order to become like this big hero like Scott, but a confidence that he's okay being peaceful, and if he doesn't want to fight and be wrapped up in all the craziness that goes on in Beacon Hills, he doesn't necessarily have to do that.
Yeah, and maybe he'll be able to start focusing on the good rather than the bad, because I think right now he's super focused on the aspects of himself that he does not like, and I think it's overshadowing the fact that he has had heroic moments.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, and the next one is also about Liam, which I thought was interesting, and I think this has been going around, but I'm just a little slow, so my apologies if this is a duh fact. This is from Brack666 on Tumblr. Regarding Liam and the Berserkers, my first thought was PTSD as well, but then I started wondering, what if he's been affected by them somehow? What if his anger makes him susceptible to becoming a Berserker himself? Which was interesting. I actually didn't know a lot of the history or the folklore of Berserkers, so I just kind of did a quick Google. And some of the highlights were, they're referred to as Nordic peoples who could be found performing inhuman feats on the battlefield, sometimes taking the skins of wolves. Uncomfortable rage is the signature of the Berserker. These fierce warriors would not back down when injured or against overwhelming odds, and be completely numb to pain and the killing that they were doing. This is a lethal combination and makes the Berserker a plausible candidate for creating the werewolf myth. So I think it's definitely interesting that somebody has brought that to us, that he could eventually turn into one.
Yeah, I think that's sort of been floating around amongst us too, because Back when Malia was scratched by them, we wondered if she would start turning into one of them, and that hasn't been the case. And I think, like, PTSD with Liam makes a lot of sense. He's really shaken up. But I've been thinking as well that because of his anger, he could be susceptible to changing into a berserker. But the only problem I have with that theory that, you know, because I came up with that too, and I was like, oh, maybe this could be it. Well, wait a second. We know when Derek and Chris were talking that berserkers have somehow, like, they used to wear the pelts of animals to the point where they became animalistic and they started to become inhuman, and you can't do anything to stop them. Like, you can't turn them back. You just have to kill them. And it was something that Chris had clearly said earlier on. And I feel like there's something else to it, that it's not as simple as, like, getting infected by a berserker and all of a sudden you become a berserker. I think that there must be rituals. There must be, you know, something that you actively do to become one of them.
Like the anger behind it.
Yeah, exactly. I really want to know more about the berserkers. I think they're really interesting. I want to know how Kate controls them. I want to know who those people are. Like, you know, where did they come from? What lives did they have before they were berserkers? How did that all happen?
I agree. I think I'm very interested in knowing more. Obviously, I'm still kind of picking up from last season where I'm remembering things like, oh, yeah, duh. But, yeah, I'd like to see more on it.
Okay, so you get the non sequitur question this week.
Oh, yes. Okay, Karen, what would you pick as your last meal? Which I know you loved that question. You were so excited to answer that question because it's not a morbid question at all. We've just spent an hour talking about evil werewolves and death, but please just answer my question.
This is really hard because I actually was kind of excited to answer this because I really love food, like, so much. I don't know what I would pick, though. Is that terrible? Like,
come on.
Okay,
they've sentenced you and the execution is tonight. Karen, what are you eating for dinner?
What did I do?
I don't know.
Okay,
you hit a teenage boy and turned into a werewolf.
Sounds very naughty. Okay. I think I would pick, like, a really good steak because I love steak and I try not to eat, like, red meat too often. So I don't eat steak a lot. So that would be, like, one part of it. This is going to be a very large meal, by the way.
Yeah. You got your side dishes too.
Yeah. And, like, some shrimp because I love shrimp so much. Oh my God.
So you've got surf and turf.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, there has to be something spicy in there. Also blue cheese. Also mushrooms.
Oh my! Oh, she's okay. Gonna have a steak covered in, like,
mushrooms
and blue cheese
and onions. Oh my God! And blue cheese. Yes, I'm, like, my mouth is watering right
now.
I
think her plan is to, like, kill the guard, the executioner, by her breath alone, so he passes out and she can make a run for it.
Garlic mashed potatoes.
Garlic blue cheese.
Yes.
This is smart.
Yes, I think, and, like, just endless amounts of Coke. Coca-Cola, not the other kind of Coke.
Oh,
because,
well,
I really like Coca-Cola a lot.
Very nice. So that's it?
For now. Mm-hmm. I might, like, have addendums to my meal. Oh, by the way, do I get a dessert? What would I have for dessert?
Sure, yeah, you get dessert.
I really like blueberry pie.
Pie.
Oh! No, oh. I would have, oh wait, yes, I'd have a slice of blueberry pie and Cherry Garcia ice cream.
That's so weird. Okay. Anyway, my turn. Let's see, I would have my mom's chicken and sausage gumbo, because that's one of my favorite things in the world. It's like a comfort food for me.
That's what she's going to make me when I come visit you, right?
Yeah, I've already told her.
Yes.
And she also, whenever she makes gumbo, I guess this is a Louisiana thing, but she makes potato salad.
Okay.
And I put potato salad in my gumbo and just kind of mix it all together, and it's very good.
That's kind of strange, but no, I would not be opposed to it.
I promise, like, there's a lot of people here who don't think it's weird at all. But anyway, that would be my meal. For drink, it'd be sweet tea. Because I don't drink sweet tea anymore because the sugar, it's all unsweet with artificial sweetener. It's just not as good. So I'd have some real sweet tea. And for dessert, for those of you who are, like, Walt Disney World traveling fanatics, they have a Bananas Foster bread pudding. That is amazing. And I would want that as my dessert.
I would also drink some of my Jennifer Blake tea because that's my favorite tea.
Aww. He's so cute.
I'm really hungry now.
It's like, man, I'm going to go. I can't get any gumbo anywhere. It's too hot. Nobody's like, fixing gumbo.
We don't have steak here. We don't have blue cheese or mushrooms. I have some onions. I don't really want to just eat onions, though.
Man, you need some batter. Go fry them up. Make some onion rings.
Mmm.
Okay, now we're getting way off topic.
Yeah, way off topic. Okay. Okay.
Sorry.
So that was basically the episode. Oh, wait. We have a couple other things. Oh.
We do?
Yeah, just, like, small things, because I thought this was pretty cool. There was a deleted scene, quote-unquote, in this episode where after all the assassins flee and everyone's kind of like, okay, we're okay now, in the background, if you look at it, you can see that Derek pulls Brayden into a hug.
It's so cute, and it's, like, half covered up, but yeah, they're just kind of reassuring one another that they're both fine, and it's so cute. Guys, stop it. Don't look at me.
And the other thing is that in the hospital, when Peter was being crazy pants, he talked about the desert wolf, and it wasn't in connection to Malia. He basically called her an assassin, and I was pretty surprised by this when they, like, showed that part. I was like, wait a second. Did we know before, like, anything about her? Did we know that she was assassin? But I don't think we did. I think this is completely new information and makes it even more interesting if this happens to be Malia's mother.
Yes, and her fear that she is not a good person.
Yes, exactly. That killing.
She's already convinced that killing is in her genes because of Peter.
Right.
So now this would just add to it, which it's is just interesting.
Yeah, double. Double stuffed murder.
Now I want Oreos.
Murder.
Makes me crave cookies and milk.
Okay, we're definitely done now. Next week, Teen Wolf Season 4, Episode 11, A Promise to the Dead, will air Monday, September 1st. The synopsis says, Scott and his pack begin a dangerous battle against an old enemy. Can we assume that enemy is Peter, or do you think it's...
I was hoping for Jackson.
Aw, Jackson's not an enemy anymore.
Well, old. He was at first.
Yeah. I hope it's Gerard, just because I need...
Maybe Matt will come back.
Maybe. No, I want it to be Gerard, just because I need him to be dead. Like, it really stresses me out knowing that he's just out there doing something nefarious. You know he is up to no good.
You know he's sitting there watching, like, Price is Right in the soap office.
That doesn't sound very nefarious.
Have you seen Price is Right lately? It's gone downhill.
Has
so
it?
Much.
Aww.
No, actually, I really don't know.
Oh. I was actually going to be really sad because I used to watch Price is Right a lot as a kid.
Ever since Bob Barker died.
Aww.
Anyway.
That's it for us. Hope you guys enjoyed the episode, and we will talk to you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Your question is so morbid.
It wasn't meant to be morbid. It's just supposed to... It's an interesting way of talking about your favorite food. Shut up, Karen.
Okay, yeah. On the last day of your life.
Come on now. It's fun.
It's not morbid at all.
I bet your Peter would have a good answer.
He would. What would Peter have as the last meal? He'd it'd be something really pretentious.
The flesh of his enemies. Are you okay?
Oh my god. I was thinking like, you know, a really high end steak or something. Like, well, I guess that could be the flesh of his enemies. I mean, like, you know.
Oh, we have Hannibal here.